The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl Carol Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski. Hello.
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 I'm done.
And that's the end.
That's the end of the podcast.
Thanks for
listening to our podcast. I did my robot opening, and now the rest is up to you.
That's right.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
How you doing?
Good. How was your week?
It's the week before Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Feels a little like, you know.
The week before Captain Marvel.
Like we're waiting. For the big arrival.
You're waiting for it's like an oncoming storm.
Indeed.
I've been trying not to look. It's funny because I'm on Twitter all the time, but I've been trying to not look at, you know, the British premiere happened and tons of people have been tweeting about it. But I'm like, please stop talking. I want to actually see it and not know that much.
You should try not going on that Twitter. I just looked at the I saw the picture of her in the dress. That's it. That's what I saw.
That was a beautiful shot, though. That dress was amazing.
Yeah. They were like, you worked out. Your back's in good shape.
Look.
Show the back.
Lashana Lynch worked out, too. That's goals.
Yeah.
So
I work out.
I mean, oh, do you?
Yeah.
I'm doing sit-ups right now.
I don't know if you could wear a pink bodycon dress like that, though.
You don't have faith in me?
I mean, I think you could do it. Are you? All right. We're all going to Emerald City. Is anybody? I had to go to an event last night and discovered that none of my nice clothes fit anymore. So I gained about 15 to 20 pounds in the last couple months. Is anybody doing the thing where they feel like they've got a last-minute prep because they know they're going to be on a stage on camera, sitting down. Yeah, anybody got that on their mind?
Yeah, that's weekly.
Yeah.
To be my age, you just kind of, you know.
You're not that far ahead.
Who am I trying to impress?
But
see,
you can, because you're the dude that works out. You will look
so
good.
So you do work out. So, I mean, you're trying to.
So he didn't gain the weight like we did from sitting behind his mics.
The hypocrisy. Anyway. A bunch of stuff happened this week. A whole mess of trailers dropped. The Oscars happened. Had mixed results, but there's good things from the Oscars that we can talk about. Pokemon games happening. And speaking of Captain Marvel, there's a Rotten Tomatoes kind of thing that's, I think, worth talking about. But first, we do this thing at the top of every show where we talk about the things we're personally geeking out about. Just those lonely moments, solitary, where we discover a thing and think, that's nice. Adam?
Yeah.
What was that thing for you this week?
I guess it is a discovery for me because I've never seen it, but my wife got from Netflix Return to Oz.
Oh, wow.
Starring a very, very young Fairuza Balk.
Oh, you've never seen Return to Oz before?
I have never seen the live action one. I think there's also an animated version.
I seem to remember
seeing all these characters in animated form at some point in my youth.
Yeah,
but I never seen the anime or the live action film. We have not finished because we are old people and we have a tendency to fall asleep on the couch, but late at night watching movies. But I started it. It just put me down this hole of reverie about how Disney used to not be afraid to really mess with kids' heads. It is a freaky movie.
Yes,
like really, really free. I mean, it opens, the opening sequence is basically Dorothy being taken to a sanitarium where she's locked in a room with people screaming in the halls outside. Then she's strapped down to a gurney and taken in for electroshock therapy in this creepy, rotting hallway. It's just really, and, you know, the adult characters are all really scary. And it put me in mind of Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is a great old Disney horror movie for children. I'm curious as to when that changed. When it was decided that really freaking children out in children's movies was not a thing we were going to do anymore.
I think it happened in the millennium we are currently in.
No, I think it's been happening since nursery rhyme, British nursery rhymes and killing Bambi.
No, I mean like when they you know when they got rid of it.
Because, oh, they decided to
because
stop.
Because things
okay.
are things are less traumatic now.
Well, no, and I will say are like they still no they still do a things like bit. They'll kill the parent figure or something like that. But that's a one off thing. This yeah. is a this is a the beginning of this movie is just creepy.
Yeah,
like it's you, I'm telling you, there's she's in this room and there are people screaming bloody murder, insane people in the down the hall, and you know this woman in black. Straight out of a horror movie that is you know her caretaker in this place, and it's just a vibe. It's not so much they still do the thing where oh we're gonna kill your parent figure, we're gonna take away the thing you love most, whatever, and that's traumatic, I guess. But this idea of just really making a messed up psychedelic movie that is not afraid to scare kids, you know, and I think I don't know that is a thing that happens as much anymore.
And you watched this before you went to bed.
Oh, I don't care.
I mean, look, I here's the thing. Therapists need to get paid. So they got to be making more movies like this. I would yeah. say, I mean, oh L. Frank God. Baum wrote some pretty weird books.
Right.
So I own that movie.
Yeah.
Actually, this week, my wife got an Oz-themed tattoo sleeve on her arm. Just happened. So it's very serendipitous that you brought it up.
And the other thing I'm trying to figure out is how Dorothy got younger between going to Oz for the first time and then coming back the second time, because Fruza Balk is, what, 7 or 8 in this movie? And Judy Garland was most definitely not 7 or 8.
That's hilarious.
When she went to Oz the first time.
Well, they don't care about continuity in the Oz shared universe.
I'm saying this is like, in this day and age, there would be a, you know, full fan theory as to how Dorothy de-aged
between
films.
I'm sure there's a Reddit page. I'm sure there's a Reddit
so.
On it.
So anyway, return to it. Oz.
Nice.
Freaky, creepy old movie for kids.
Good call.
Yeah.
If you've never seen it, I highly recommend to the listeners at home. Karima.
Yes. I'm actually geeking out this week over a comic that just dropped from Valiant, Forgotten Queen, mm-hmm. from Teeny Howard, drawn by Amilcar Prina, or Pina, I'm sorry. Butchering names. This is one that I actually knew nothing about. It's brand new. The first issue dropped this week. And it takes place basically in, I'm going to say, in the Mongol Empire. I want to say 16th century, but don't quote me on that. But the point is, during a lot of these wars between the Mongol Empire, Siberia, Carpathia, that whole region, there was a woman that was supposed to have walked with all the generals and had the ability to basically make men fight. Basically. But she was a witch. She was not a conniving person. She just had the power to tap into men's souls and just basically amp up, I guess, rage within them. So she was basically a warmonger. What I actually think she is the spirit of war incarnate, because she's very, very old. And parts of her armor have been scattered in modern times. So it's a parallel story that you start with her doing her thing in the past, tons of people dying, and then this excursion with this diving team trying to find, you know, artifacts and things like that. And not just finding them, but finding her or the next one of her that has been reincarnated. Even though the story is a bit convoluted, Pina's art is gorgeous. And the end of the story, I mean, it's not the end of the story, it's just the first issue, but I'm hooked. At the end of the issue, basically, what seems to stop her, or I don't want to say stop her, I want to say slow her down, is that she finds another emperor to, usually she's just, you know, I'm bored, let me take over her country. But she falls in love with the emperor, who's actually a queen, it's an empress. So there's a whole, I want, sort of like, I want to make her mine, and running off, and, you know, I will give you the, and she's just not impressed. And I think I'm really excited to see where this goes. And again, have I mentioned that the art is amazing? So I get excited when
yeah. I'm going to say I also am not impressed, and I'll tell you why. I can inspire rage in anybody, regardless of gender, just by talking.
But you don't make so millions of people kill each other.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
I've never felt rage around you.
Thanks.
Burning
Adam
deep inside.
Yeah.
Consuming every organ of my body.
That seems really honest.
Until it feels like I'm going to explode in conflagration of pure hate. And
I cannot wait to do Emerald City
Comic-Con
with you.
That's never happened to me.
Really looking forward to it.
So I'm like, I'm going to leave, guys. That's all I have to say for today's podcast. Bye.
Anyway, that's the end of the segment and my life, apparently.
So, Danny.
Good Jesus.
Yeah. What are you geeking out about?
Bye, Danny. Nice knowing you.
What am I geeking out about? Living to the end of this day. What else?
How about the end of this podcast?
I mean, dream big. I saw a fan trailer made by none other than head of the Klan, Topher Grace. Just kidding. He played David Duke. It's just so weird because he played it with the exact same way that he plays Foreman in That 70s Show.
Exactly.
It's really weird.
So it made, I know I had the same reaction when I saw it, and I was like, okay, so does that mean Foreman was
it's
going
weird.
To Klan
it's so
meetings,
weird.
Sneaking out?
Anyway, the point is, as you may have heard about Topher Grace, he is a real Star Wars fanatic. I know he's done his own edits of the prequel trilogy to try and, you know, make them better. I think he made like one whole movie once out of the three of them. But now he put out this trailer called Star Wars Always. Him and a buddy of his put this thing out, and it's you know, good.
This part's over.
I'm not going to wait around for the Empire to draft me into service.
The rebellion is spreading.
The time to fight is now.
And I want to be on the side I believe in.
Yeah, meanwhile, I'm stuck here.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You watch it?
Is it real?
And you think, I'll watch it at Star Wars. And he includes all sorts of stuff. He includes stuff from every single movie. He includes deleted scenes he put in there. It was pretty slick.
Does he include the scene of Bea Arthur singing in the Mos Eisley Cantina?
That is the only thing that is missing.
I want no part of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Come on.
No Christmas special or holiday special, excuse
That's
me.
Right.
Means
they don't celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, it's the one thing that they missed.
Worst life day ever.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, you're not the first to make that.
I'm going to write Topher.
Highly witty, highly original statement.
Are you sure?
You're the first one.
There you go.
No one else.
I'm going to write Topher a strongly worded letter.
Danny does not want to live to the end of this podcast.
No, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so
the only way I would ever kill Danny was by hugging him so much that he suffocated, because I just couldn't stop sharing my love.
You see, and now I'm plausible deniability. I don't want to know. Yeah.
Let's continue.
It seems so normal. Anyway, there was that, and I also I got caught up on the Supergirl again, and they had the first episode where Dreamer Nianal put on the suit, helped Supergirl save the day. And I'll tell you what I really liked about that episode is they've got this whole setup where the Brainiac character is from the future, continues to sort of have a crush on her, wants to go out on a date with her, and the struggle between the two of them is that he's from the future, so he knows her lineage, he knows the great things that she will eventually do. And so he's so impressed by her that he keeps sort of stepping in it. And I like that. I like there's still the sense of he's othering her a little bit because he's struggling with that, but in a way that I think is very honest, a thing that's very true. You know, I think people have this sense that, you know, like people that think about dating trans women or will say, well, she's hot, but also that's gross. But that's not really usually how it goes. It's usually more, I don't know how to deal with this. This is a huge thing that this person went through and might feel impressed and feel maybe not up to snuff by comparison. And I like that they found a sort of textual way to present that story idea without it specifically just being a trans narrative. They found a new way to sort of present that. And I thought that was beautiful. I really, you know, of all the things that I'm not sure about on Supergirl this season, the one thing they continue to get right every episode is the stuff with Nianal. So I'm very pleased with it. So if you're not watching Supergirl, for the very least of watching the evolution of that character, I think it's worthwhile. Anyway,
I did want to thank you for something, because last week you were talking a lot about Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
And I finally got mostly caught up, but I'm definitely up to the, what I'm going to call the Little Shop of Horrors episode where they bring, or two episodes where they bring him back with the Audrey 2 actually a portal and is sentient and happens to talk like a little girl from Trinidad. That whole thing when they bring him back and everything, I think I did tear up a little bit. So I'm.
Oh yeah, it's yeah, very it's, powerful. It's, they did is, that, and then I won't say anything, but they referenced something from the original series that yes. never got resolved this week. Oh, you already know about
it. I did read about
it. Talos
yeah.
4.
Yeah.
Talos 4 is the thing from the cage in the menagerie.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to be dealing with the Talosians this season.
Interesting.
Which is really cool.
I did not know
this
that.
Is such a bummer, because I don't have CBS All Access, and I really want to watch
could
this show
have
now.
You could. You could just spend,
you're like
you
in
could
charge.
Just spend that
you could
money,
get it.
Man. Just spend that money.
It.
Just listen,
spend that. Demand it.
Times is tight.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Anyway, listen, that's the stuff that we were geeking out
thank
about.
You.
Yes, I'm glad. I'm really, you're welcome. So let's talk about the Oscars, shall we?
Sure.
Sure.
They happened.
They happened. Some things, one that I think the universal meme would be, perhaps they should not have won. But on the plus side, Black Panther did real good.
And the Oscar goes to Black Panther, Ruth Conner.
Like I said before, all I cared about was Ruth and Hannah getting theirs.
Well, that's
and
the thing.
They got
I think
theirs, and I was very happy about that.
A lot of people focused on the Best Picture nomination because it's such a big deal for a comic book movie to get a Best Picture nomination, etc. But putting that aside, it did do really well across a bunch of other categories that weren't sure things. You know, so
yeah, it yeah. won three awards.
And music. And music. And
music is
and
one yeah. of the three. Yeah.
The score, it's funny because I remember sort of like researching the score because I like this. I'm one of the people who really like the score better than the soundtrack. Mm. The score was so incredible. He got some amazing artists. And I was just, there was a documentary that came out. I think it's still on Netflix on how they did the music for Black Panther.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out.
And it was so well done and so well researched, and even how he went to find the artists and the instruments. Anyway, long and short of it is, I was surprised when he said he thanked Ryan Coogler, and I'm saying he because I cannot remember his name, but he thanked Ryan Coogler. But then he said, this is incredible because we were talking about doing stuff like this when we were roommates in college. And I was like, whoa,
yeah.
That was just like such a weird, like, and at everybody up there, everybody involved with the movie, whether or not it was the Oscars or interviews, anything I've read or even spoken, people I've spoken to, love Ryan Coogler because Ryan Coogler like lets the team, he hires people to do what they do. He directs them and he just lets them do what they do. And it's just so, I think this is an example of it. So even though it didn't get Best Picture, political or not, I think a lot, the three that they won are really, really integral to think how movies get made. And I think it was wonderful. Plus, Hannah's dress. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. I thought the only other true meme of the night was that everyone was wearing glasses. Did you catch that?
Yeah,
like,
I did.
Literally everybody wearing glasses.
I didn't see that.
That was pretty funny. But yeah, it was great. Ruth Carter went up there and said, it's about time, which I appreciate.
Well, I thought it was also great that she was able to thank Spike Lee, who gave her her first
yeah,
job.
Yeah, that was
and
cool.
He was there.
That was the thing, because she'd been nominated for Malcolm X, and
she's had like six nominations.
I think it's only two that for at least for Academy Awards.
Oh,
it was
that's true.
It was
yeah.
Malcolm X and Amistad.
Yeah,
this I remember. And then so it was nice that she finally won. But then, I mean, it was great that Hannah Bigler won. That was very cool. Of course, like she got up and they said, "This is the first time a black woman has ever even been nominated for this before." And I said,
can we just?
I just had that gif, you know?
Yeah, I felt bad because I wanted them to say Hannah Bigler has won for her incredible work on, you know.
Right.
Yeah, instead of that old riff.
Like, and we got that part. Can you please talk about what she did on this movie?
Yes, we already knew that sad news. But
well, we knew that sad news. I don't know
maybe,
that necessarily
yeah,
everyone knew that sad news. And honestly, yeah. I don't necessarily see a problem in marking it. I agree they also should have, you know,
yeah.
said everything else. That
that's
shouldn't be
saying.
The only thing yeah. you talk about. But yeah.
That's my point. I think it should be said, but yeah. I also think we should say all the other things. But either way, she won. I'm happy she won. I don't know. What did you guys think about the rest of the host list show?
I just want to know if it's hard being so hardcore. Okay, so here's my thing. I have not seen A Star Is Born yet, so I didn't know this song. So the Oscars was my very first full exposure to Shallow.
Okay.
And
so you haven't heard the Barbara Streisand?
No, no.
Bette Midler version, but I'm just saying, like, in terms of the other, you didn't see the first movie years ago.
Oh, not Bette Midler.
No, it was bad. No, I've never seen A Star Is Born in any fashion. So anyway, that moment was scintillating. And I feel bad that Bradley
acting.
Cooper's
His wife
and other were sitting right there.
Just watching that happen. And then and then Lady Gaga went on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes, I saw that. That's funny.
And denied it.
Yeah.
And I said, okay.
But that's exactly what she would say if they were doing it.
But they were acting.
I know. No, it's true. And then I gotta be honest.
This is a conspiracy. No, it's
not. No slouch to no disrespect to the divine Miss M, but I was kind of sad not to see Emily Blunt sing the Mary Poppins song.
I wanted Emily Blunt to sing her own song because
I'm always so confused. I mean, I get it. I know why they bring out Bette Midler for this stuff, but the thing is,
it's
because there was this period in time where she sang songs of this sort of type. You know, these very saccharine little tunes. So I guess they thought it would be
a cool gap.
But the thing is, Bette Midler is a brassy broad. You know, I mean, this moment where she was really known for that stuff is kind of, in my mind, an outlier. It's not really who she is. Like, she made she made that money. I'm not trying to, I'm not coming for anybody making that paper, but like, it's not who she is. Anyway.
And that wasn't my favorite song from Mary Poppins Returns anyway. So
me neither.
But I'm like, wait, you have songs from a movie with Lin-Manuel Miranda and there's no Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Right.
Like, come on.
I would have loved to have seen Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda. I can't remember the name of the song, but the song they do.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
That would have torn the roof off that place.
Yep.
I think if those two people had gotten on stage and done that. So what are you going to do? But I mean, the lack of a host didn't hurt, I don't think. We got a Maya Rudolph sighting at the beginning, which is always awesome. I'm happy for any Maya Rudolph sighting we can get.
Yeah.
Speaking of dresses, what?
Yeah. Did you like Trevor Noah?
I did.
That was the other Black Panther moment.
Wait, let me tell you. Well, you guys knew he was in Black Panther, right?
No.
Okay, so he is the Siri of Shuri. So the voice of the computer in her lab
is Trevor Noah. Interesting. Okay.
And so he goes around telling everybody that he starred in the movie. But I don't even understand how I knew. I somehow got on Twitter at that moment that he said it, and somebody who spoke Kosa was hollering. They're like, guys, that's not what that means. None of that is what that means.
Yeah, I mean, he was right. What he said was, white people don't know that I'm lying.
No, I would bet you.
Nobody correct, knew what he was lying.
I was going to say, I would bet you that 99% of the people in that theater did not know he was lying.
No, nobody. I mean, nobody had that reaction in the theater that you could tell. You didn't hear anybody laughing.
Unless John Connie was there somewhere cackling in the back.
Yeah, because
I was like, what is happening? Yeah, that was a moment. But I think the funnier moment is the fact that nobody realizes that he was in Black Panther.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So, I think this was, we've passed one milestone now, which is having superhero movies nominated for Best Picture. Hopefully that is a barrier that will remain broken. And, the more quality work that gets done in the space, the more chances we'll have to see that kind of thing happen and maybe someday win.
Yeah, it could happen.
And the Oscar goes to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, that was. Oh, that's the other thing we didn't talk about. Thank goodness that one.
It would have been real weird if it hadn't.
Yeah,
that would have.
Can you imagine if Isle of Dogs won?
It would have been. It would have been like if Bohemian Rhapsody won for editing. Could you imagine? It did win for editing.
That was crazy.
It was weird. It was weird. Anyway,
I haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody, so I can't say. It is interesting. It's the first year that there's a Pixar film nominated and it didn't win. That when
is that really
last
the first time?
No, I don't know if it's
happened.
The first time ever, but it's very rare.
I'm sure that Shrek probably won the year that it came out, and that's a DreamWorks.
Yeah, but that year there was no Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that's true. Into the Spider-Verse was something else.
So deserved.
Yeah, it was amazing, and I was surprised by certain things and not surprised by others, but I was very happy that Into the Spider-Verse won. And technically with Black Panther, even not getting the best picture, but with the two movies getting some type of Oscar for something, there is a show of superhero films having, an effect. I mean, we haven't seen it yet, but do you think that they would give, if Captain Marvel ends up making more money than Black Panther, do you think that they'd give that movie one?
I don't think so. Based on what I'm hearing so far. Like, some of the early reactions to the film have come out and people are saying, it's really good, but they're not saying it changes the way you're going to look at superhero movies or something like that, where like people did when Black Panther came out. And I think I think it's less about the box office and more just that it was one of the first of especially this wave of superhero movies to really have something to say, and do it extraordinarily well beyond, being good is good and being a jerk is bad. You know, like that was kind of the theme of Iron Man and Doctor Strange and in several other of these films. I mean, I guess there was Winter Soldier, but even Winter Soldier, as Danny pointed out, kind of undermined its thornier question with some last minute mustache twirling comic book villain stuff.
Yeah, you know, the bad guys are the ones shooting at us.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So whereas Black Panther, you know, it asks those questions and never really said, you know, I guess it endorses a certain answer because T'Challa wins, but
yeah,
it never really undermines that question at all. And I think that was significant for the genre as a whole. So I think it's going to take something special for a superhero movie to really, and for whatever the next one is, to really land that and get in that best picture category. But who knows, you know, there's a lot of them coming down the pipe. So
yeah, it's going to be that Jared Leto Joker movie. Anyway, totally going to be the one. I don't know if anybody noticed, like 60 trailers dropped.
At least.
It was a trailery week.
Well, yes. Then I have missed a few because I did not see 60.
You're not doing your job.
I'm sorry.
Really disappointed
I'm
in you. What a letdown. I'm just going to start making up names and see if Karima will pretend that she watched the movie. Did you see the one where the Kid Icarus trailer that dropped? It was crazy. That eggplant wizard looked so good.
I would not see, but in the world we live in now, I'd be like, oh, Kid Icarus is coming out as a movie?
And also, really? I'd be like, wow, talking eggplant. I could see that happening. Like,
sure. Like, is it CGI or a guy in a costume?
Exactly. Like,
yeah,
it's
actually, they just used the emoji, the eggplant emoji.
Perfect.
And it's kind of dirty. Anyway, it's an X-rated Kid Icarus movie. Who knew we were going to get one? NC-17. Anyway.
I just came up with a really good dirty name
for the Kid Icarus
movie. But I'm not going to say it because we're not that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about it later.
You can tell me later. Yeah. Okay. I can't wait. Anyway. What was your, of the ones that dropped, there was Hellboy, there was Detective Pikachu, there was his Dark Materials, there was Dark Phoenix. I think those were like the big ones. Did you have one that sort of stood out to you?
It's hard because I don't know Pokemon that well.
But how did you feel about the trailer for the Pokemon?
That's the one that jumps out at me just because it's so.
Ace Pokemon Detective.
Weird.
Ah, my clues!
What is all this?
Harry is still alive. Case closed, but still open until I solve it.
I probably don't know it much better than you do, but I was fascinated by, like, I immediately was like, okay, I have to watch this again and see if I can find it. I did recognize Bulbasaur, and I cannot remember the name of the one that is in the detective's office. He's patting him on his head, and he's, like, growling. I cannot remember the name of that one. And then, of course, Jigglypuff. Jigglypuff is a mood. Yeah. But
Mr. Mime, I guess, is really going to get a lot of screen time.
Is that guy at the end?
The guy who's,
Was miming?
Yeah.
And then one of them, another one who I don't remember the name of, he was like attacking people, which was confusing because it's a very quiet Pokemon. And again, I don't remember his name. So, but it's just one of those things where here's the thing. I think they did a really good job because I wasn't pulled out and saying, oh, okay, this animation sucks. I can't tell. Like, we were in there like, wait, which one was that crossing the street? So you actually felt that they were there. So I'm looking forward to, like, look, I like effects movies, even if I don't know what's going on. So I'm looking forward to that one. That one stood out to me the most. And Hellboy, but I think because I knew what was going on in Hellboy.
I mean, I think it's that the vibe of it that appeals to me is very much that Who Framed Roger Rabbit vibe of, this is just the world, you know? No one kind of comments on the fact that there's Pokemon tending bar. You know, that's just the world we live in where there's Pokemon walking around. And it's weird, and I am there for that.
Now, here's the other thing. What I do know of Pokemon is different than Detective Pikachu, the game. So, Danny, did you ever play the game?
I didn't.
Okay, because I'm curious as to whether or not they were tending bar and doing things like that in the game, and we just don't know because we haven't played this in a while.
I mean, I like that too. It makes me kind of wish that, as with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that they did. I wish it had a Ralph, Wreck-It Ralph, Ralph Breaks the Internet kind of thing where there's other characters that are showing up. You know, you could have like Mario in the background or something. Be kind of cool.
Well, you never know. He might. What if that's the post credit scene?
That would be phenomenal. I mean, there is going to be.
They're in. Pikachu comes out of the bathroom. He's like, oh man, the toilet's broken. And then now there's a knock on the door, and you see just the shadow outlined through the glass of a guy holding a plunger, and it's Mario.
I mean, Illumination is going to make a Mario movie. So, yeah. You know, and all things are possible. Yeah. I mean, I think that was the one for me too. It's exciting to see Mewtwo show up. I think it's probably also, you know, they very wisely dropped the second trailer and then, you know, I think a day or two later
announced
said,
the two
and
games,
by
right?
the way,
yeah.
there's going to be two new games. That was Canada Nintendo. When they get it right, they get it real right. They really got that right.
Well, the Toy Fair was last week or the week before, and there were rumblings then. So
yeah,
I had a feeling that we were going to see something before Captain Marvel, at least. I just didn't know it would be like this week.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool that that those two things kind of happened together. Made you feel like, I guess it's okay that Reggie Fils-Aimé is retired.
Bowser's taking over.
Bowser is taking over. Remember when it was the year of Luigi? Well, now it's the year of the Luigi Bowser fan fiction.
That's right.
Of which there's apparently a lot. Anyway. I mean, look, I'm just reporting the news. I'm a journalist reporting the facts. Yeah, so that happened. You want to talk about I said His Dark Materials is only, you know, it's like 30 seconds.
Yes, very short teaser.
But you felt that you had something to say on it. So
I certainly
I would
do.
Say, please speak on that.
Well, I have questions, so please.
Okay, are you guys readers of the books?
No, which is why I have questions.
Okay. I'm a functional illiterate. So.
All right, well, that's fair.
No, but so, my first question is this the Golden Compass guy? The
yes.
same guy that wrote the Golden Compass?
The Golden Compass is the first book of the His Dark Materials trilogy.
Okay, so continue. That was my
no, no,
first
no.
thing.
And so that's, I mean, the movie that came out was such a bummer.
That's what I'm saying. It had
such a great, you know, like Daniel Craig was in it, and he's great fit for that part. And of course, Nicole Kidman is awesome, and it just really had the potential to be good and was not. So that was a bit of a drag. But it kind of came right before TV took over as the place for, oh, you've got a series of books or a series of comics or whatever. Good. We're going to give it room to breathe.
Like,
I mean, because I think
yeah.
that's the thing everybody felt about the movie is that the books are very rich and they create this very rich world, and the movie did not have time to serve that. And I'm optimistic, given who's making this show, that we're going to get the full development of this world. I mean, the one thing about the trailer, the teaser, everybody was kind of worried about is like, ooh, there's no demons, you know? So the premise of these books is that people in the world that Lyra, the main character, lives in, people carry their souls around outside their bodies in the form of these creatures called demons, and they take the shape of an animal, and it's based on, you know, you and your personality, what kind of animal. And when you're kids, before you're fully formed, the demons change shape, so they can be any animal at any time. But once you're an adult, they kind of form into a certain thing. So it's a very central part of the story, a very central part of the world the book takes place in. And people were kind of like, oh, there weren't any in the what does that mean? And I think it's just that this was a very early teaser.
It was a teaser. I don't even think this was a trailer.
Yeah, all that stuff is going to be CGI. I'm sure they're still working on it. So I would be stunned if that was not a significant part of what we see. The other interesting thing is Lin-Manuel Miranda is in it as Lee Scoresby, who's a big character in the books. And Lee Scoresby, when I was reading the books, you picture Sam Elliott in that part, maybe a little bit younger Sam Elliott, you know, but still that grizzled, you know, big mustache having type of guy. And is Lin-Manuel Miranda going to fit that part? I don't know, but I like me some Lin-Manuel Miranda. So I'm like, I'm just excited. I'm excited.
Everybody likes that Daphne Keene.
Yeah, and Daphne Keene. Yeah, yep. That's, I mean, that's
I love Ruth Wilson.
Ever since I saw her on Luther.
So this
cast is fantastic, and you know, it seems like they're using their whole ass. You know, they're not half assing it. So
the entire buttock.
That's right. So
and there is a they're doing a series.
Yes.
It seems like they've learned from the mistakes.
Yeah.
The director is the same one that directed Les Mis, I believe.
Mm.
Tom Hooper? Hopper?
Yes.
Hooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, he directed Les Mis. So we know it's going to be visually stunning.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Like, I don't know that it's going to be something like a Legion or something where you see that and you're like, wow, I've never seen anything like this on television before. But I don't know that they need to do that. It's a solid fantasy story. I mean, the real trick is when it comes to, there's some really subversive stuff in the second two books of this trilogy, which is kind of the trick that His Dark Materials pulls, is it sets you up in this kind of Harry Potter young adult type of vibe and then takes a hard left turn into some really interesting things that I think a lot of the more religious people in various parts of the world were not too happy about. there's always that question.
So it's the opposite of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Right, right. So yes, it is exactly that. It is exactly that. And so...
Yeah, Pete Pullman is like the opposite C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, yeah. So the question is always, when they adapt this, are they going to just go all in on that? You know, because it's such a big part of the story as to some... And it's hard to say. I don't want to say things without spoiling things for people, but... So the question is, will they go whole hog on that? And that's something that we won't know.
Wow.
We won't know that for seasons of the show. You know, we won't know that for at least until season two, if not later. So that'll be the interesting question that I'm waiting to see when this show comes out.
Okay, so I think I'm going to read the books.
At least
the first one.
If you have not read the His Dark Materials trilogy and you like fantasy and...
I like Discworld and I like all that.
Yeah, but it's a little different, but it's kind of steampunky and all this different stuff, but it's fantastic. Like, okay. They're fantastic books. And I can't, like, even the first book doesn't fully capture what makes the whole series so great. You kind of have to take it as a whole.
Okay.
I feel as though we should probably talk about Dark Phoenix just for a moment. There were two things that sort of, there are two sort of big notable things about it. One is that in the trailer, they make it pretty clear.
Jennifer Lawrence is getting out of her X-Men contract.
The thing is that they then, you know, Simon Kinberg, they asked him point blank if they were actually going to kill that character off, and he said, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Raven
she did.
Die. Tell me how we fix this, Charles. Tell me what to do.
I don't know what to do.
What they don't understand, they fear, and what they fear, we seek to destroy.
This is your fault, Charles.
I tried to protect her.
And so that's happening. And then he said a bunch of other people were going to die. So that was one thing. And then the other thing was there was a tank that was attacking them that said MCU on the side.
I missed that.
Apparently.
I didn't see that.
I don't know if that's... I read an article about it where they said it said MCU.
I hope that's true.
It was like a Sentinel tank that was coming for them?
Yeah, it was Mutant Containment Unit, I think is what it's supposed to stand
for.
It
is. No, that's true. And that's actually in... Wait, that's true.
So it works on multiple levels.
It does, because the Mutant Containment Unit, you've seen that on The Gifted. Whoa.
Yeah, so I...
But I didn't think, because I've literally never seen the letters MCU.
People were calling it a diss on the MCU.
I love it.
But then I thought, is it a diss or is it just an acknowledgement?
Right.
That, you know, this is the end.
Or a fun little Easter egg. I mean, whatever. It doesn't have to be...
I mean, you know, it is it's kind of interesting, right? Yeah. Because, yes, Jennifer Lawrence was not the star that she was when that first one came out, you know, that First Class predates The Hunger Games, just barely, but it does. And now she's so big and it's sort of, you know, the worst kept secret that maybe she's perhaps not putting her whole ass into it, let's say. And so they're gonna kill her off and let the sort of the pathos grow out of the fact that the characters ain't around so much anymore.
Yep.
And then they're going to kill a bunch of other people apparently too, because nothing matters, because this is the end of the road.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, if she goes full Dark Phoenix, a lot of bodies hit the floor, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, did you guys like the trailer? Did you find it? Are you excited for this film?
Nope.
I mean, it was okay. I mean, I've seen people say that this is the most X-Men looking movie, that it actually looks a little bit more like the X-Men in a way that the other movies just don't particularly, but I guess
I'm just tired of everybody standing around looking pensive. I for some reason, when Phoenix and I feel like it was the third movie, when it was
Last Stand,
yes, and it was Famke Janssen and she got her full powers and then she literally takes out Professor X. That had so much emotional weight and so much, even though the film wasn't great. No, the film itself wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But that scene I thought was fantastic. And I'm not getting that gravitas here. But then again, I think I'm tired of McAvoy and...
It's hard to say, man, because like I try not to judge based on trailers, right? Because trailers they're cobbled together from a lot of, you know, sometimes the dialogue doesn't even match what's happened to the actual scene, you know. It's hard to tell. I'm not getting the best vibe from Sophie Turner in this, which makes me sad to say, because I think she's amazing on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would be the case but in maybe, one and not
maybe
the other.
That's the problem. Maybe it's that we just haven't been getting a good vibe overall about the film in general, and then that it's bleeding into our reaction to the trailer.
I can't tell the character of the film overall. I can't really get from these trailers so far. It's hard to say. It's like when the Thor Ragnarok trailer comes out or whatever other film, Guardians of the Galaxy, any other comic book movie, you can kind of get a grasp of the vibe overall. And I'm just not getting it here. I don't know that it feels like there's a strong emotional through line. I don't know. So,
I mean, bless them. I think they're trying. I think they want to, I think that it, from a certain point of view, I think that Simon Kinberg and Fox sort of views this movie as though it is the Professor X to the MCU's Magneto in a way. They're trying to, give people hope that an X-Men movie can still be great under their tenure, because, Logan was pretty good. I don't know how much of an X-Men movie we would describe that as being, but, they could do it, but I do think that generally speaking, I think the MCU is kind of give them hope, my old friend, and all I ask in return is you don't get in my way.
Yeah.
I'll watch it. I think that Magneto's winning this one as well.
Yeah, but
saying.
That scene when they're all locked in the truck, they're all, locked into the MCU truck,
yeah,
or whatever that was. I don't know if they were in that truck, because again, trailers, they cut them all kinds of ways. But then when they were all locked in there and he's like, we're all going to die. I'm like, it's just he just stays with the bland, like, here we go again.
Yeah. I mean,
it'll be interesting to see.
It could be good. Deadpool and Deadpool 2 are good.
It's true.
Logan's good.
It's true.
It could be.
If that Deadpool or that Cyclops or Teenage Negasonic Warhead show up in this movie, then...
Oh, Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Did I flip it around? Sorry. Yeah. Negasonic Teenage Warhead. If they show up...
that's the thing, is I just think it's hard. X-Men is an ensemble story.
It is.
And it is hard to tell a good ensemble story in a two-hour movie. It just really is. And when you pull it off, like that's why, when you pull off a Guardians of the Galaxy, for example. But even that was driven by Peter Quill, right? Peter Quill was the main character and he was the thrust. So it's like, it's hard because there's this dual need to serve every single one of the X-Men who's in the film as much as you possibly can, but also... create something compelling that doesn't feel like you're trying to do too much. And I feel like they've struggled with that over the past couple X-Men films especially. And it'll be interesting to see if after this and if there's a reboot, if they're talking about recasting Wolverine already and stuff like that.
Well, that's the other layer, isn't it? Because we've heard these rumors before that Avengers Endgame might have an appearance by an X-Man or something, or a Wolverine, some type of person. And at that point, boy, the jig is really up.
Yep.
So we don't know. I mean, that's, otherwise, I mean, I think, honestly, for the sake of Fox's bottom line, I hope that doesn't happen in Avengers Endgame, because if that happens, then I feel as though the sort of canon obsessed public will say, well, this doesn't count. Right. It doesn't matter. So why bother? And I wonder if that's not just going to be the case anyway.
I don't think they're going to, because now that Disney moving forward owns Fox's movie stuff, it's why would they? They'd be subverting themselves almost, or their future efforts.
I see your point. I guess I just don't know how they're sort of viewing these movies that were made before they owned it. Anyway, yeah. Hellboy. We can talk about Hellboy.
Let's talk about Hellboy.
Listen up, ladies and gentlemen. Out there, there's a fifth-century sorceress who wants to bring down the curtain on London and the world.
Why do you fight for those who hate and fear you? You were meant for this.
You thought it was too much of the 90s.
Well, yeah. So
grimy grim.
They released a Red Band trailer last night, which I guess was meant to show us. Because the thing is, I think that people said, after the last trailer came out, a lot of the lip service that had been paid about the film was that it's going to be a darker version than Guillermo del Toro's. It's going to be really dark, darky, dark, dark, dark. And the last trailer still
didn't look dark.
The last trailer still had that, fun vibe. So they're like, we're going to put out a Red Band trailer and show you how serious and dark this is. And it's hard. I feel like they can't win, because when I watch it and they drop all these, like, ooh, he said the F word. that's really dark and serious. And I, as someone who has been an adult for a long time and says the F word frequently in day-to-day conversation, I don't, it doesn't have that impact, I guess, for me. I don't know. Anyway, this is another one where it's just really hard to tell.
What is dark about this, that it, when you, when I say the word dark, when in terms of this Hellboy versus the last one, F-bombs aside, I definitely think it's bloodier,
yes,
you know, gorier, and it has like a lot more violence than the original one. And I got a chance to talk to Mike Mignola last year in an interview, and I asked him, I was like, were you excited for the old one? He's like, no, not really. I'm excited for the new one because I wrote it to be a dark, messy, violent story, and I feel like they kind of made the first one too bubblegum.
Mm.
So the first teaser, though, I do agree with a lot of the fans. It was like, this is kind of bubblegum with swear words. What's happening? Right. So this one, still cussing, but there's definitely some blood loss.
I think the thing for me is that I love Hellboy comics. Like, I'm a huge Hellboy fan. But the thing that I never... It was never the action in Hellboy comics that really drew me in. It was the depth of the folklore that they really got into. I learned about some cultural folklore that I didn't know reading stuff like that, and kind of the investigative aspect of the BPRD. You know, some weird thing has happened and we have to go track down exactly what monster is causing it. And it wasn't always in the comics, and now I have to kill that monster. It had a bit of that Doctor Who vibe of, you know, there might be a trick to this, mm-hmm. or there might be a way to resolve this, you know, so that the monster is okay and can go live its life, but it's not going to hurt people anymore. And those were the Hellboy stories that I tended to really like the most. And
Maybe we'll get, I mean, look,
we might get some of that.
If this thing is a success, then you could feasibly see a more John Arcudi BPRD kind of story later down the pike. You
and
could see Chris Robertson do a Witcher or a BPRD story himself, you know, or something that is the authors that sort of evoke those types of stories are not. I mean, Mignola's got some of that too, for sure. But I think of Arcudi and Robertson as two of those guys that they could be sort of mining their story types too.
Yeah, and it's kind of like how it's kind of the same thing with the X-Files, right? Like my favorite X-Files stories were always just there's some weird thing in the woods and they have to deal with it, not the alien conspiracy thing. And the Mignola stories, the big arcs in Hellboy were always these big apocalyptic end of the world type things, which were great. And I really dug those, but not my favorite part. But still, I love Liv Tyler. I'm psyched to see her as a villain in this. I think it's a perfect role for her.
Is it Mila Jovovich?
It's Mila Jovovich.
Mila Jovovich, whoever. Are you sure?
Yes.
Yes. But it's absolutely Mila Jovovich.
But here's the thing, Adam. When you see this trailer, the first time you see her in the woods, they did so much beauty cleanup on her face. She does look like Liv Tyler.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I completely. I'm so sorry, Mila.
No, it's fine. But my thing is,
she's a big listener. Too.
Well, no, I have interviewed her before, and now she's never. Yeah. Next time I go to interview her, she's gonna be like, "You confused me with Liv Tyler."
Oh my God! I was also excited to see Daniel Day Kim because I wanted to. For people who don't remember, Daniel Day Kim is playing Ben Daimo. No, he's not Japanese, but he is better than Ed Skrein, who did step down. And I did think that acting wise, I was interested in seeing him also, not just because I'm a fan, but also because he's got this Were Jaguar thing going on. For those of you who weren't figuring that out when he started going into Hulk mode in the trailer,
mm-hmm.
It's an interesting cast. Sophie Okonedo, there's other people in here that I didn't even realize were in here that are really good actors in their own right. And I just hope that even though this is an action movie, I do hope that there is a script that helps to really give them something to play with. But I'm honestly, the graphics do look amazing. And the first teaser, I really missed Ron Perlman as Hellboy. This time I miss him less.
Yeah, I'm getting used to it. But I think the problem is just neither one of these trailers has had that moment that as a Hellboy fan has made me go like, oh snap, I can't wait to see that on the screen, you know. And that doesn't mean it's not there. That doesn't mean it's not in the film. Who knows? We'll have to see, wait and see, you know. It's still a vibe for me of cautious optimism as opposed to just full bore fanboy optimism. So
because we've had our hearts broken before.
Well, it's, or just they haven't given me that thing that's really turned my crank, so to speak, you know, where you're like, oh, I can't wait to see this, you know.
Well, we can't all be into Wear Jaguars like
that's true.
Like Caramel.
But I want to see what turns Adam's crank.
I don't. I'm good. I'm real good.
Anyway. As long as it's with your whole ass, I'm done.
That's right. So, listen,
we're going to talk about Captain Marvel and Rotten Tomatoes, but first, let's take a quick break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What a tremendous break.
That was perfect.
Adam's sigh went through the entire break.
It did. I never stopped sighing.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Captain Marvel, some people have seen it. It had a couple screenings. It had a red carpet or blue carpet.
We're not going to spoil it. Don't worry.
This week. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, none of the people in this room have seen it yet. So, we have nothing to give away. But, you know, it's out in the world. Some people started to see it. And then, because there was some positive buzz, people were feeling good. Brie Larson was speaking with a sweet young child on the blue carpet. It was all so nice. It was very important for people who are upset that Brie Larson talks about feminism and talks about inclusiveness in her interviews. They had to undercut that. And the way they did it is that they started putting sort of negative review scores on Rotten Tomatoes, even though they hadn't seen the movie. And they were doing it in the scores. There were a lot of people doing that.
For those of you who don't know, this is actually a common practice.
Yeah.
Which is why, and I don't want to say you can't rely on Rotten Tomatoes because I know people who work there and I don't want them to not, you know, their voices matter. But it is something that happens not just on Rotten Tomatoes, but other critic sites too, where people will try to en masse bring down the score of a movie so that it won't make its money. I don't think this movie's going to have that problem.
but the bottom line on it is, or at least sort of where we are right now, is that Rotten Tomatoes sort of took an action.
Yes.
So they put a stop to it.
You can't. They just got rid of that score and said you can't weigh in on this movie until it's out.
Good.
And that was that.
And I
think they should get rid of the fan reviews entirely.
Okay. Elaborate on that.
It's not a right.
But wait. But
critic reviews are critic reviews, okay. And that's fine.
Okay.
And listen, this is not to me saying fans can't have an opinion, but this is a tool. It is obviously being abused more than it is being used constructively,
yep.
Especially around particular films that politically rub some people the wrong way for certain reasons. So it's why we can't have a nice thing.
Right.
This thing would be nice if people used it the way it's supposed to be used, but no one is. So screw it. Goodbye.
Yeah. And so and Rotten Tomatoes basically said, I guess, with this statement that, Adam, you're saying no fan reviews across the board.
That's
Rotten
right.
Tomatoes is saying no fan reviews before the movie
comes
drops.
Out. Yeah.
Okay.
And then after that, it's a free for all. So are you ready to watch me try to thread this needle?
Sure.
Because I have a take on this that I haven't heard. So
we need a drum roll.
No, All right. So here's the thing. What I hear time and again. And the reason why I don't really engage, but I do listen to people. They talk about, you know, the problems of access media. And they talk about it in a way that's very conspiratorial, which I think is not terribly realistic. That, you know, everybody's a shill. Everybody's getting that Disney cash. But here, all right, so here's the actual reality.
I was going to say, like, have you been on my mentions lately?
Here's where we actually are in the industry. If you want to talk about, quote, access media. Every single person that wants to have access to things early, that wants to get access to things so that traffic is drawn to their site, will on occasion, everybody at this podcast, everybody in our industry occasionally has to play softball, occasionally has to you know, look the other way a little bit. Everybody has to do it.
Wait, returning what? Like a movie that's bad?
In the sense that, you know, I hated a movie, but I won't say that I hated the movie. Or an actor behaved a sort of way and you don't want to, you know, get it, put it out there that that happened.
Right, because you might not get the next review,
right,
next gig.
So to some degree, everybody in our industry that is a part of this quote-unquote access media has to sort of decide which battles they want to pick. Right. Which are the ones where my voice is the one that has to get said. Right. And I think that this is the source. This is a thing that people are aware of. I think that they blow it up to be larger than it really is. But OK, let's acknowledge what I believe to be a truth, which is that. And as far as what fan reviews and scores could be, I think in people's minds, ideally, is that they act as a kind of counterbalance to that because they're not beholden to anybody. They can just say what they want. Mm-hmm. The issue is that there are just very obvious movies that get chosen every time. Right. You know, it's Ghostbusters 2016. It's The Last Jedi. It's Captain Marvel. It's you know, it's every single time you see it's the same thing. Well, if honestly, and to anybody who thinks that Rotten Tomatoes shouldn't have done this, that they really believe in the value of letting people know before the movie's even out that they're not interested. They're trying to take a stand against something, trying to take a stand against corporate greed, corporate influence on access media. If that's your beef, if that's your problem, then do that on every goddamn movie. Do it to every single one of them, no matter how many times it comes. Just do it every time a big tentpole movie comes out, just take a crap on it. Right. Do it with every single one of them. Otherwise, what are we doing? Because instead, what I see, you know, is looking at my Twitter feed where people are putting a picture. Man, I'll bring it right up. This thing actually got me pretty heated. Making children happy does not excuse your behavior. Hashtag Captain Marvel. And it's a picture of Brie Larson on the blue carpet with that little girl in the Captain Marvel uniform. And then a picture of a little girl smiling with Hitler. Like, that's the same thing. It's not. Can we just be reasonable people?
Here's the thing I want to point out. I'm not excusing that. I didn't even see that. I don't want to. I'm not looking. That for any system to we got to go through this until the system fully changes.
I don't know, man. Fan reviews are a mature thing. We've had that for a long time.
I don't mean just fan reviews. I mean just like a lot of the stuff that we talk about here with, like, you know, people losing their minds because, oh my God, I'm being preached to XYZ, well, whatever.
And here's the thing. I think that some of this, there's also this mentality, you know, Zachary Levi had to put out a video where he's saying, you know, this isn't helping me. This isn't helping DC. And there is that element going on too. If people, you know, we get that sometimes.
Oh, about Shazam.
You liked this movie, you're a Marvel shill, you know, or something like that. And I think that this idea of, it's just a very old, old concept. Of, yeah. If that's the motivation for it, of like, if this thing succeeds and this thing doesn't, we're going to get much more of this thing and none of this thing, of thing B, you know? And we're not in that world anymore. Several DC movies have underperformed and we're still getting a bunch of DC movies. You know, it's not a zero-sum game anymore for science fiction, especially for comic book stuff. So if that is your mentality, that you have to hurt this other thing to advance this thing that you other the thing B that you want, it's time to change your point of view, because that is not the world we live in anymore. Like, there are superhero movies coming and TV shows coming down the pipe for the next decade easily. And so, you know, if you think that you're helping DC or because you loved Suicide Squad, nobody did, so now you have to crap on this thing that everybody else seems to be really excited about. Don't do that. It's not doing what you think it's going to do, and it's only hurting the overall experience for everyone, my thought.
I mean, look.
Do these people work? Because to have the amount of time to sit up all day, every day, and repeatedly write these and garner, like, votes and people to actually write in and create multiple accounts. What do you do?
Yeah.
I'm in the wrong line of work.
This weird stuff that comes out. People will say, well, the bastions of truth you can find on YouTube. No, not true. Here's what I would say. If you want, if the attitude, which I understand, which is that they want critics and people, interviewers, people that are working in the industry to hold each other accountable, to try and make it, you know, and look, if you want to support that, Hey, great. Sounds great to me. Absolutely hold people accountable for those things where you really can see that, you know, if where there's an actual sense, where, not where you're actively trying to prove a thing.
Right.
You say, I don't like this person, so I'm going to look for evidence to prove that they're a shill. Don't do that. That doesn't help anybody. That's not how the scientific method works.
Right.
But if you want to say we want to hold this industry more accountable and find a way so that corporations can't do that. Look, I don't know the easy way to do that because I'm in it and I can tell you that it's pretty complex. But tit for tat, if you're doing that, then you better look within that YouTube community too. Look within those review score communities too, because there's, you know, there's from my mind, there's even less accountability there.
But I'll be honest, like, you're right, Danny. Like, I agree with you. We've all been in a position where we've had to play ball with a corporation or something in the interest of a movie or TV show, whatever. But I have never known personally, and this is in 20 years of working in digital media, someone to softball a review, like a straight up review. I've never met a single soul who's ever been paid off this thing.
It doesn't happen.
Right. So, you know, like, yes, yeah, sometimes, or we're not going to say like, ooh, you know, this really looks stupid and whatever. You use your language, you know, to think critically and analyze a movie critically and review it as in a thoughtful way.
We'll just say it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, but never, you know, I don't know, man. And listen, there's also this mentality of, for Suicide Squad is a movie I keep coming back. A lot of people really loved that movie and a lot of critics and reviewers really didn't. And that's fine. You know, this idea that because a critic or a reviewer liked or didn't like something that you liked, that they are on the take or that they are, you know, an idiot. It's just wrongheaded. Like, it is okay that if a critic didn't like something and you did that, that the world is fine for everyone. The critic is just the person who has this particular platform because they have a certain degree of expertise or they lucked into a job or whatever. You know, it's not an indictment of you and your opinion, and it doesn't need to be treated as such. And that person's opinion is valid for them and based on certain things that they bring to the table, just as yours is. And I don't know, man, listen, these are movies about superheroes. We don't need to take it seriously.
Yeah, and also, everybody knows that Rotten Tomatoes is a flawed system.
Yeah.
To go, this has got an 88%, therefore it'll be good, is flawed thinking.
I mean, I think that there's a thought that helps it at the box office. You know, if this movie gets 80, and I think there is some validity to that. I think people do look at the Rotten Tomatoes score and make, you know, am I going to see this movie decisions?
The thing that I don't agree with in terms of Rotten Tomatoes and a couple of the other sites that are like that, and I'll make this short, is that there doesn't seem to be anybody international writing for it. And I said this about Alita. They gave that like a 60% or something like that. A lot of people didn't like it, including people in this room.
Mm-hmm.
But I had said internationally, this is going to make a lot of money. It made twice what it did domestically in its first weekend in China. I think by the time it gets like it, there's so many people that love that genre that are going to make it make a lot of money. But I'm not bashing.
Right.
I'm not sitting up here saying it's a conspiracy to bring down Alita.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen plenty of examples of films that have done super well despite bad reviews. And so, again,
yeah,
I think
we don't know what was going on with Venom.
Yeah, so
it's made a lot of money.
Like, in a perfect world, we should be able to have those user reviews or the excitement score leading up to it. But people aren't just, they're not using the tool the way it's meant to be used. And so therefore I'm fine with the tool being shut down. I think that makes perfect sense.
I hope that we find a better solution. I think that sometimes you have to close the door for a little while and reevaluate.
Yeah,
anyway,
take the toys away and make them lay down. Take a nap.
Anyway, that's it. The point is that thing that you said was very thoughtful, the Alita thing. And so just so I can get it in there, Karma was right. Hit it, Paul. That's it. That's our show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, which I know you're going to do if you haven't already. Thanks for leaving a review, which I know you're going to do if you haven't already, because it really helps us out. Thank you so much for that. And please make sure that you're checking out all of the other podcasts in the Sci-Fi Wire family. Strong Female Characters has got a month-long event going on right now. Just started today, March the 1st. So check that out. And you've got your Fandom Files. You got your Battlestar Galactica cast. You got your Blue Book, Project Blue Book. You got your Behind the Panel. All the Amazon podcasts. It's a long list. I realize every time
that I
say it. I
can't believe you can remember all these.
And also, you know, of course, you can listen to Adam Swiderski and sometimes Matt Romano. slow jam the news.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I slow jam the news.
I mean,
that is what you get to hear in your living room.
It's a unique way to do it. Before we go, where can the kids at home find you on the internet, my friends?
You can find me, Karma, the Blurred Girl, T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L, all over the interwebs, but mostly on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram at Rock the Faces.
My name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. And we'll see you again next week.